We have been seeing how similar the questions relating to land rights questions, to cultural rights, are around the world. How similar our problems are to the problems of indigenous peoples in the colonial areas.
Alf Isak Kaskatalo is a Sami, or Laplander, from northern Norway. The Sami, like Eskimos, Indians, and other Aboriginal peoples of the world, are seeking a land base, access to subsistence resources, and some form of self-government. Alaska Natives made a historic land claim settlement in 1971. They are now looking at other international settlements for ideas to improve their own claims act. This is Holding Our Ground.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pirtle Law Firm.
We set up a tent embassy outside of Canberra and played a very major role in the elections of 1972, getting a Labor government into power. Through many protests, many movements, in 1975, we were successful in setting up land councils in Northern Territory.
In 1971, when Congress passed ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, it spurred other indigenous peoples to seek settlements with their national governments. Changes have been most dramatic in Australia.
On the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody says, on the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody says.
In 1788, the British formed a colony in Australia. No attempts were made to get consent from the Aboriginal peoples. No treaties were negotiated, and nothing was done to protect Aboriginal lands. Almost two centuries later, changes started to take place.
On the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody.
Shorty O'Neill of National Land Council, Alice Springs, Northern Territory.
In 1976, the Northern Territory Land Right Bill was passed through federal parliament. And immediately, all of the desert lands and the swamp lands were handed back to Aboriginal people. But the other lands in Northern Territory, something like 75% of the state, is very rich pastoral industry. And we've had major struggles to get any of that land back for the traditional owners. In Northern Territory, if you want to claim land, then the traditional owners must go to court and show their association with land. And for most of the traditional owners to do this, it's a very traumatic situation because they have to release information that is very sacred and very secret to them.
Stanley Scruton is chairman of the Central Land Council in the Northern Territory, where some lands have been returned to Native control.
The tribe themselves picks out six or seven elderly people, and they form a land trust. They're the one who holds it for their people and the children in the future, and they're not allowed to sell it. They're not the bosses, and don't tell the people what to do.
The land trusts are also exempt from taxes. Since the first territorial land rights bill passed the National Parliament in 1976, other settlements have been negotiated with the territorial governments.
In 1980, the Pitjantjatjara land rights bill went through South Australian Parliament, and it was quite different to the Northern Territory bill.
Shorty O'Neill.
Mainly because the traditional owners there were still very much on their own land, and they were able to force the South Australian government into a negotiation and not a land claim situation. And when the bill went through, one-tenth of South Australia, which is mainly desert lands, were handed over to those people.
On the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody says.
One major sticking point is self-government. a problem for indigenous peoples all over the world.
When we first opened up negotiations with the government, we were told point blank that there was no way that the Australian government was going to look at sovereignty. We decided to continue with the talks. The federal government started to talk about a national land rights bill and entered into talks with the National Federation of Land Councils and the National Aboriginal Conference.
Elsewhere in Australia, the government of New South Wales is setting aside 15% of land taxes to run a land council. Leftover monies can be saved to buy back land that will be turned into Aboriginal title. Aboriginal land councils have now been formed in most regions of Australia, and a recent inquiry in Western Australia may be a starting point for a land settlement there.
On the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody say, on the way to our brand new day, everybody, everybody say.
We regard ourselves as one people, despite living in several different national states. We regard our land area as being our traditional ancestral land. We call it the Sapmi, that is, the land that is now in traditional use for reindeer breeding, hunting, fishing, and which we regard as the land base for our people today.
Alf Isak Kaskatalo lives in the largest Sami community called Kautokeino, located in Norway. The 65,000 Sami reside in what is now northern Norway and Sweden, with a few thousand in Finland and the Soviet Union. They began organizing in 1907 to protect their lands. A joint conference of Sami from Scandinavian countries meets every 3 years. They adopted a comprehensive cultural policy in 1971, and in 1980, a joint Sami political program.
In Finland, there was a probational election in 1972 based on a census that the Nordic Sami Council itself had arranged. Later in 1973, there was passed a presidential bill in Finland recognizing and structuring the registration of the Sami population in Finland.
In 1979 and 1981, demonstrations and hunger strikes by Sami youth in Oslo helped move the Norwegian government to action. Two special committees were created, one on Sami status and land rights, the other on language and culture.
The former government of Norway expressly promised that it would recommend a constitutional amendment to get recognized the status of the Sami people as an ethnic indigenous group in Norway, and to promote the erection of a Sami census and an elected body which could be raised on the fact of such a registration of the Sami population.
The Sami have organized locally as well as by regions and as a nation. Their major goal is protection of the land as a secure land base for traditional economic systems. Kiskatalo emphasized the Sami's need for self-determination.
What we want, broadly, is to take the consequences of what democracy really is in the Nordic countries and claim not only the individual rights, but the right of being a people with a certain self-determination. We are Samis, we are not Norwegians, Swedes, Finns, Russians, and so on. We want to have the right to elect our own political organs to represent us towards the government and to regulate matters among ourselves.
Native peoples of Canada, like peoples in Australia, are negotiating their agreements region by region. The Inuit and Cree of James Bay and northern Quebec were the first to settle after Alaska. They took a hard look at the Alaska settlement and decided against shareholder corporations with limited enrollment as a way to hold the land. Mark Gordon is vice president of Makovic, one of the corporations formed from the agreement in 1975.
We set up a membership corporation where if you are an Inuit and you are enrolled and you become a beneficiary of the agreement, then your descendants automatically become beneficiaries or shareholders of this corporation as well. The land areas, we went for ownership, but protected ownership. And the lands are not held by the regional corporation. The lands are held at the community level by what we call the landholding corporations. Each village has a landholding corporation that has the rights to administer the lands. And there's no corporate link other than a moral one between the landholding corporation and our regional one.
The protection of subsistence rights was done through land provisions, setting up exclusive hunting areas and a special management board.
There's about 3,500 square miles in total for the whole region that have been set aside for exclusive hunting activities. That means only the Inuit could use these areas for hunting.
While the Inuit and Cree have made significant strides in managing their subsistence resources, they have just begun to address the issue of sovereignty. The Canadian government has also started to deal with sovereignty. In 1982, existing Aboriginal and treaty rights were made part of the Canadian Constitution. In 1983, Indian self-government was proposed as a third order of government within the Canadian system. The details are still being worked out. In Canada's northwestern Arctic, COPE, the Committee for Original Peoples Entitlement, first made a land claims proposal in 1977. An agreement in principle was initialed in 1978. The Canadian Parliament finally passed an agreement in August of 1984. The Inuvialuit people got fee simple title to about 35,000 square miles of land and special rights in an area five times that size, larger than California. Oil, gas, and some minerals still belong to the Canadian government in most of the lands. Dwight Noseworthy negotiated the settlement for the government of the Northwest Territories.
One of the goals of the agreement is to provide the Inuvialuit with a strong and enduring economic base.
The COPE settlement features a complex structure of corporations to handle land, development, and investment. The land is basically held in trust by the Inuvialuit themselves. They have exclusive hunting, fishing, and trapping rights over their own lands and preferential subsistence rights throughout the entire region. Canada still controls water and waterways for management of fish, navigation, and flood control, and government officials can enter Inuvialuit lands for these purposes.
The land ownership is subject to certain conditions. It can only be expropriated by order in council or by federal cabinet approval. There are provisions for things such as public roads, right-of-way, sites for national parks. And the ownership also includes ownership of sand and gravel, which is a very important resource in the Western Arctic region.
The general laws of the nation and territory apply, except as written in the settlement. There is a compulsory arbitration process if there are disagreements between the Inuvialuit and the government. The settlement left the basic system of territorial government intact. After 13 years of negotiations with the Canadian government, the Council of Yukon Indians signed an agreement in principle for a land claim settlement in 1984. 10 of their 12 Indian bands must approve the settlement in order to seal the deal, but only 8 have agreed. Yukon Indians would receive $620 million over a period of 20 years. The money would be held in trust corporations. The proposed agreement would secure about 5% of the Yukon Territory for the Indians.
These lands would be held by the band corporations, and only the improvements on the land would be taxed. Raw land would not be subject to taxation. While the lands would be available for sale to anybody, the lands cannot be subject to seizure for non-payment of taxes.
Mike Smith of Whitehorse is vice chairman for land claims, Council of Yukon Indians.
The hunting agreement provides that we will set up a management board, and this will have total management of all game in the Yukon Territory, and the Indian people who are Yukon beneficiaries would have one half participation on that board.
Yukon Indians would be entitled to half the annual harvest quota for moose and woodland caribou. Existing takes of fish would be maintained.
For example, on the Tatsushini, we catch something like 90% of the fish that come up that river. This quota would be protected forever for native food fishery.
Quotas also extend to trapping.
70% of the land mass in Yukon Territory would be reserved forever for native trapping.
Yukon Indians say they need more than just guaranteed this. They have rejected plans where non-natives would have control over their lands. Ownership does not always mean control, particularly over subsistence resources. Now that Native Aboriginal rights have been included in the new Canadian Constitution, people are questioning the need to have their Aboriginal rights extinguished, along with the validity of the one government approach contained in their proposal. The Council of Yukon Indians will make changes and then return to the negotiating table. Nunavut is a proposal for a new territory in Canada's Eastern Arctic. It would feature parliamentary-style government and the Eskimo Inuktitut language as the official language. Nunavut negotiator Randy Ames.
They wanted to put people on an equal footing with the outside world. And it wanted, I think, to give people freedom of choice in the future. We got the federal government to agree that the primary purpose is economic self-sufficiency. In order to meet that goal, Inuit would have to be able to own lands for reasons of subsurface or mineral value, commercial or industrial value, of conservation value, of areas that were important to people for spiritual and cultural reasons.
The land selection process is still in negotiation, but they have established a game management board, which is not advisory. It has authority. It is made up of 4 Inuit and 4 government people, federal and territorial. It brought game managers together in a comprehensive approach to wildlife management.
We managed to establish that people had the rights to hunt, trap, and fish over the whole Nunavut territory. We proposed that there be a harvest study that would identify basic level of need, basically what people were taking. And this was going to be a benchmark by which we would measure allocation and future management decisions. This benchmark wasn't frozen in time. People could take more than that. It shouldn't drop below that unless conservation needs required it. If there's not enough wildlife to go around to meet all needs, people's food needs are met first.
Inuit have the exclusive right to hunt species such as polar bear, muskox, walrus, and whales based on need.
We got people the rights of first refusal when it came to any sport or commercial operation dealing with wildlife. We also argued successfully that the definition of wildlife should include flora, the plant life.
Development on Nunavut lands is subject to an application process where it goes to an impact study if the development is seen as appropriate. Nunavut leaders plan to negotiate claims to offshore areas, interests in seabed resources, and ice areas. Nunavut is proposing a public form of government which will have a very high native majority of 85% to 90% in the early years. If they get a territorial government, it can be created by an act of the federal parliament without concurrence or interference from the other provinces. Dennis Patterson.
We are looking for some model of allowing elders to advise the government of Nunavut. And we are also being pressed very strongly by the communities to give even stronger emphasis to the incorporation of customary law and traditional methods of dispute resolution, to build those into the Constitution of Nunavut. We have determined that it is necessary to entrench a Bill of Rights in order to protect the rights of minorities. We wish to ensure that individuals of all cultures and races are free to fulfill themselves in Nunavut. It may be that this Bill of Rights might eventually need to be used to protect the interests of a native minority, if that should ever occur in Nunavut.
Nunavut seems closer to reality after 10 years of negotiations with the Canadian government, but no one is predicting when an agreement will be reached. The Dene and Métis peoples are jointly trying to sort out boundaries with the Eastern Inuit, the Western Inuit, and the Yukon Indians. The Dene and Métis haven't always been able to agree among themselves. Steve Coffwee is president of the Dene Nation.
The general objective of the Aboriginal people together, in spite of their differences, they want the right of Aboriginal people to self-government to be recognized and entrenched in a constitution.
Like the Nunavut proposal, a long residency requirement is desirable. Steve Coffwee outlines a government under consideration.
We would call a Senate made up of the Aboriginal people within Dene. There would be an elected government operating much the same as any other place that would operate on consensus, and that it would be seen in terms of an assembly of people, assembly of community representatives that would meet and make decisions as a government for people.
Steve Coffwee says provisions must be made in case the Dene and Métis become a minority in their own homeland. They are working on what type of government they want, what jurisdiction it will have, and how it will make decisions. Negotiations haven't been easy.
What the federal government and the provincial government insist on is saying, we don't know what Aboriginal rights is. And so what we do is we place an empty box in the middle of the table. And as we identify rights, we then throw those in a box. Right to go hunting, right to trap. You have a right to a certain amount of land. But let's extinguish all the other rights first. The view of most of the Aboriginal people in the country is that they've got it all wrong, that in fact all Aboriginal people still have a degree of sovereignty, that they have not given those up. And therefore, when they come to the table, what they have is a box full of rights. It's not totally full, because if it was, we would be independent nations. So there is a little bit of your rights removed when you go to the table, but it is a full box. And that is how you negotiate with the federal government. That is generally why it is for us difficult to buy the extinguishment policy, because the empty box approach is taken. The bottom line of it all is that they have to give up their Aboriginal rights, whatever they are. And that is what we have disagreement with, that we don't think it is actually possible for that to happen.
International law supports the efforts of indigenous peoples to seek a land base in self-government. Pope John Paul II proclaimed it in Yellowknife, Canada on September 18, 1984.
Today, I want to proclaim that freedom, which is required for a just and equitable measure of self-determination in your own lives as native peoples, in union with the whole church, I proclaim all your rights and their corresponding duties. Peoples have a right in public life to participate in decisions affecting their lives. Participation constitutes a right which is to be applied both in the economic and in the social and political fields. This is true for everyone. It has particular applications for you as native peoples in your strivings to take your rightful place among the peoples of the earth with a just and equitable degree of self-governing. For you, a land base with adequate resources is also necessary for developing a viable economy for present and future generations.
The movement of indigenous people seeking self-government and a land base is worldwide. Daly Sambo runs the Anchorage office of the International Eskimo Organization, Inuit Circumpolar Conference.
Whatever terms we use and whatever approaches we use within our own respective countries, we're all working towards the same end, a security of a land base, security of the resources, self-government, all of those things. And I think that the bottom line is that we're all moving and making basic efforts to be kept from being wiped off the face of the earth.
Join us for the concluding program in this series when Alaska Natives look at the dreams, realities, and choices for the future. For Holding Our Ground, this is Adeline Raybaugh. This program is produced and written by Jim Sykes and Sue Burris, edited by Sue Burris, and researched by Frankie Burris. Special thanks to the community of Gamble for singing, dancing, and drumming. Thanks also to ULO Records of Greenland for music from the 1980 Circumpolar Conference, and to the music group Cuckles for the song Brand New Day, recorded by Imparja in Australia's Northern Territory. For more information about this and other programs in this series, write to Westia Concepts, P.O. Box 215, Anchorage, Alaska, 99510. Holding Our Ground is a production of Western Media Concepts, which is solely responsible for the content.
Funding for Holding Our Ground is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum, the National Endowment for the Humanities, Rural Alaska Action Program, the North Slope Borough, and Zients Pertl Law Firm.